Well, welcome back. And tonight's topic is going to be on happiness. And I decided, you know, we had been doing this series on difficult emotions and discursive emotions. I just couldn't bring myself to do another one. I think they're important, and of course, you know, they're important, but I really just wanted, I feel happy, and I just didn't feel like dealing with difficult emotions tonight. So we're going to talk a little bit about happiness. When I gave my last talk, it was on fear, a very difficult emotion, and it was one of four that psychologists and you therapist types can correct me if this is not what is said, but psychologists say that anger, fear, sadness, and happiness are the four basic emotions. Well, whatever, they're shrugging their shoulders. That's what I read. So I was using those as some of the basis for getting into Buddhist psychology. And Buddhist psychology, Buddhism, is often considered, as was put in the e-news, somewhat nihilistic, kind of negative. A lot of don't do's and a lot of sitting and a lot of looking at difficult emotions. So it really gets the reputation of being somewhat negative. And about 8 years ago, I went on my first monastic retreat. I had never been on one. I'd been on many retreats, but not a monastic retreat. But I just decided I'm going to really push myself. I'm going to really sit those long sits and not eat afternoon and, you know, do all the things that the monastics do. And Ayasanta Chitta and another nun from Amravati, Aya Sundara, were the two nuns conducting the retreat. And the nuns, every other night, always have a question and answer session. They don't give a Dharma talk. You put your questions in a bowl like this, and they pick them out. And so they did that, and they came to one question, and the question was something like, where's the joy? How come nobody talks about happiness? What's going on? I want to be happy. And I remember this so well, and I'm not speaking out of turn because Ayasanta Chitta is a dear friend and one of my spiritual advisors, but in her very thick Austrian accent, she said, I do not cultivate joy. I give up the hindrances. And I remember thinking, yeah, that sounds about right. It just did not sound joyful to me. But I thought about that for quite a while, and it keeps coming back. And the truth of what she said has really started to frame a lot of my own practice. So we've got all kinds of self-help books. You know, we all read self-help books. The five steps to this and the eight steps to that and the, you know, whatever. And we rely on those in our society, our quick fixes for everything that ails us. And yet, in our society, we're not very happy. In fact, on that, whoever that quotient is, and they say the happiest countries and the not-so-happy countries, we're in the not-so-happy country aspect. And I started thinking, all these self-help books, what are they doing? It don't seem to be helping too much. If they were, we wouldn't have to be reading so many of them. So, before we can discuss happiness, do we all have the same definition of happiness? What is happiness? What is it to you? Anybody? What is happiness?
Just feeling good.
Feeling good, okay.
Feeling satisfied or contented. Feeling, well, joyful.
Joyful, okay.
Freedom.
Freedom.
Present. Awareness of the senses are bright and, you know, so.
Good, okay.
Enjoying what's around you to the fullest that you can.
Those are all good definitions. Excellent definitions. But they're not the Buddhist definition. So we're gonna go into that. Actually, the dictionary definition for happiness is good fortune or luck, or in a particular good fortune or luck in life or in a particular affair, success, prosperity, the state of pleasurable content of mind which results from success or the attainment of what you consider good. That's the dictionary definition.
Which dictionary?
Attainment.
Whatever's online, you know.
Attainment of liberation.
Well, you're getting much closer to the Buddhist definition. You're right. So I want you to take a moment right now, and I want you to think of one of the happiest times in your life. Just sit back and think of one of the happiest times in your life. We're not going to say it out loud. This is for your own reflection. And now I want you to see if you can duplicate the emotion of that happiest time of your life, or one of the happiest times. Can you conjure up that feeling exactly as it was when this happiness took place? Okay. Was anybody able to duplicate exactly that emotion that took place during a very happy time of your life? It's impossible. It's impossible to do. In fact, what you might have found is there's a tinge of sadness. A tinge of, it's over, and it's not to be repeated. Some kinds of happiness, like the kinds we just talked about, or you just reflected on, cannot be repeated. It's fleeting. It's kind of fickle. It's not sustainable. There's also an interesting scientific fact about happiness. As I was researching this, and I actually didn't realize this. Happiness of those elevated kinds, when you know you think of your happiest moments and that great sensation that you had, are not sustainable. They are literally or biologically not sustainable. According to what I've read, and maybe there's some neuroscientists here who can extrapolate on this more, but that elevated sense is your chemical balance of dopamine is going way overboard. Dopamine is just flooding the system. And if you kept that kind of chemical going on in your system, some neuroscientists say that leads to schizophrenia. You can't do it.
I sound happy.
Yes.
It actually tends to lead to downregulation of dopamine receptors.
Say that again?
Tends to lead to downregulation of dopamine receptors.
Can you explain that?
Yeah, like the receptors for the neurotransmitter dopamine that are active in your brain, mm-hmm. if you overflood them for a sustained period of time, they actually are removed from the plasma membrane and destroyed. And so you end up having less response to even elevated levels of dopamine.
Got it.
So you basically readjust to the new norm, and then if that goes away, you're screwed.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate that. That explains it quite well. And then I'm assuming the lack of dopamine would mean you would be suffering from depression. Yeah? So, you know, it's funny because the Buddha actually spoke about this 2,600 years ago, that life has its ups and downs. It's just the definition of life. It is never going to be up here, and hopefully if we're mentally healthy, it's not always going to be down here. It's going to be constantly doing this because that's the way we're made up. So, why are some people seemingly quite happy? You know, they don't seem to have these, you know, ups and downs so much. Well, we've all met, a couple of them. I know many monks and nuns, Buddhist monks and nuns, are quite happy in this supposedly nihilistic, denied everything atmosphere, and they seem quite content. And other people seem quite happy. It's because they have a different definition of what happiness is, rather than what I found on the internet, the definition of happiness. So maybe it would be closer to say that the happiness the Buddha talked about is more at ease and contentment. So I looked up the definition of contentment, probably the same place. Having one's desire bound by what one has, though that may be less than one could have wished, not disturbed by the desire of anything more or of anything different, satisfied so as not to repine. Well, that seems to be getting closer to the Buddhist definition.
Wait a minute, I said enjoying what's around you.
I'm going to get to that. So the Buddha actually talked about three kinds of happiness. Actually, he said a lot of things, and the more I study, the more I realize, no matter who he was with, there's a different take, because there's different personalities, there's different areas of practice, but in general, he talked about three kinds of happiness. And the first happiness, and in one of the suttas, I think it's a rather pejorative description, it's called coarse happiness. And it's the happiness that comes from virtuous life, moral conduct, from not having to deal with remorse, guilt, that kind of thing. And it is the initial stage of happiness that the Buddha recommended for everybody. Start following a moral, virtuous life. That's the first happiness. As you start doing this, it evolves into noticing what's happening in the mind and wanting to cultivate more happiness, wanting more of this kind of happiness to take place, which in meditation we can start looking at what is the mind doing? When are we causing happiness and when are we not? And then the third kind of happiness, as somebody mentioned, is the ultimate happiness of nirvana. Nirvana, the complete absence of greed, hatred, and delusion. So, in other words, in Buddhism, happiness is the absence of suffering. So notice the wording of that. There's no I in there. There's no self-help. It's the absence of suffering. We've heard that a million times, but I think when it's put in terms of happiness, we can see it a little bit more clearly. So it goes back, I started thinking about self-help books with this. It is the elimination of suffering. Self-help books are all concentrating on me, myself, and I. Now this is just me talking. This is not anything else. It's my own observation. You can take it or leave it. It's fine. But it does seem when we start becoming obsessed with ourselves and how do I make myself happy, it's almost a dead end. The I, as the Buddha said, is so ephemeral, it's so fickle, it so changes constantly. You have one self-help book and you're trying to fix this and it's like whack-a-mole, then something else appears that you gotta fix that. And you fix that and something else appears. I mean, the self is changing continuously. No permanent abiding self. So, everybody, we've talked about the definition of dukkha, which translation is suffering. It's not a very good translation, but that's what we have right now. And the Buddha talked about the elimination of dukkha. Dukkha actually in Pali means the axle of a cart going through the wheel, the hole of the wheel, and having it misaligned. So as the wheel goes around, it's thumping. You know, it's not a smooth ride. Happiness in...
There's another sort of derivation of the term, where ka and pali is patience. Du means without, and su means with. So dukkha, the origin is literally without patience, while sukha, you know, happiness is with patience.
I've read that, and I've also read that sukha is the realignment of that axle wheel, so it's true and smooth. So, yeah, it's very hard to define in English, so these similes are used to show unease and ease. So I think it's really funny that Buddhism a lot of times is considered nihilistic, yet it is becoming so popular. That's strange. Don't you think that's strange? People want to be happy, and they think, oh, this seems very nihilistic, and yet more and more people are attracted to this practice. I think it's because they see the validity of it, even if it might be really down deep, but it resonates. There's something that rings true for it. Something I want to emphasize, and I think this is really important, so many of the suttas and so many of the teachings are written for monastic people. I think I read someplace 2/3 of them are. Doug, something like that? Mm-hmm. So not a whole lot are addressed strictly to how lay people live us. But the ones that are, the Buddha never said, don't enjoy life. Don't enjoy your families. Give everything up. He never said anything of that. He said experiencing pleasure, such as, he didn't say this, but I'm paraphrasing. You can experience pleasure. You can experience a great meal. You can have a wonderful conversation with somebody. That's not the problem. The problem is desiring it over and over again or wanting to repeat the experience. It's the desire of this that causes suffering. With mindfulness, we could, and I was thinking of the analogy of having a good meal. Okay? You have a good meal, you're really enjoying it, the senses are very, very much involved with this, and you don't want it to end. And as the stomach says it's getting full, but the taste sensations are saying, no, keep going, keep going. Mm-hmm. I've done this where I've eaten faster so I could make sure and keep the taste sensations going longer. I mean, how sick is that? But that's what we do. We want to repeat. We desire these experiences. But if we could just have the experience itself, without having to duplicate it or make it last longer, which gets you into addiction, that's happiness. Being mindful of what is taking place and enjoying it thoroughly, and then letting it go till the next experience comes. So one of my primary teacher, Gil Fronsdale, in his Sutta study course, he talked about the Buddha's pleasure principle. And he said that probably the closest approximation of this pleasure principle come from Freud and Epicurus. And they all said that people will avoid pain and look for pleasure. But they also said, all three of them, the Buddha, Freud, and Epicurus said, but you also have to look at the consequences of this pleasure that you're seeking. It's not just pleasure and that's it. What are the long-term consequences? Now, the Buddha took it a little bit further because he also said, and there's karma involved, and if you believe in rebirth, you're going to be taking those consequences to another lifetime. And you don't have to believe that, but that's what he said. So if an action is pleasurable, that's great, but what are its long-term consequences? And this is when we can get into the first happiness, when we choose virtuous conduct. What's mentioned a lot in the suttas as a guide, I believe everybody knows the five precepts, right? Everybody know the five precepts? Well, I'm going to give you the 10 skillful actions instead. So he mentions the 10 skillful actions as a guide for creating happiness and eliminated remorse and blame that you feel. When I ordained as a lay ordained as a Buddhist minister, the five of us who ordained stated these 10 skillful actions in front of the Sangha in Redwood City. And they are training in not harming or killing living beings, training in not taking what is not freely given, training in abstaining from sexual misconduct, training in speaking truthfully, training in not speaking harshly, training in not speaking, not gossip, training in not idle chatter, training in avoiding ill will, training in the avoidance of greed, and training in right view. So these were the 10 skillful actions that the Buddha said we should all be training in. And then he said he had no problem with lay people doing well in life, who by virtue of these ethical actions gain financial rewards. So he pointed to four elements of happiness for lay people. The happiness of acquiring wealth by one's own effort. The happiness of using this wealth to give pleasure to oneself and to others. The happiness of being free from debt. We all know that happiness. When the car's paid off, boys, I feel good. And the happiness of blamelessness. And he considered the last one the most important. This goes back to virtuous conduct, where whatever you do, you don't have to be, why did I do that? Why didn't I take care of business? We discuss this a lot, and those of you who have been in my Year to Live class, how do we do this? You know, now, as life winds down, and this includes people of all ages, none of us know when the end is. We don't want to have that sense of, why didn't I take care of business? Why did I leave this? Why didn't I forgive this person? That's blamelessness. We want to have a mind free of that kind of remorse. So the second happiness is refined happiness, and this is where we developed a meditation practice. And specifically, we try to develop a meditation practice where we, and this goes back to Ayasantachitta, do not cultivate joy, I rid myself of the hindrances. Mm-hmm. We actually look at the hindrances in the mind, in our action. And the five hindrances are, again, great hatred to start with, ridding our minds of greed, of ill will, and then sloth and torpor, restlessness and anxiety and doubt. Sloth and torpor are laziness of the mind and body, restlessness and anxiety are concern over the past and the future, and then doubt. I'm reading this really interesting book, which I brought. One of my heroes in Buddhism is Anālio, Bhikkhu Anālio, and he wrote this book that just came out 2 weeks ago, Compassion and Emptiness in Early Buddhist Meditation. And he talks about the five hindrances, you know, and these really assaults on the mind as well as in our daily life. And he proposes that there are very skillful ways of ridding ourselves of the hindrances through the Brahma Viharas. The Brahma Viharas are those states of mind, the elevated states of mind. So metta, boundless friendliness, actually he calls it benevolence, karuna, which is compassion, mudita, sympathetic joy, and the last one is upeka, equanimity. And he said all of these counterbalance the hindrances. So I did this experiment. I'm talking about the hindrances in prison. I'm a prison chaplain, and there's a couple other volunteers here who go into prison. At this particular prison sangha, I had the men reflect on, during the past week, what kind deeds had they performed. And you might reflect on this as well. At first, they could think of absolutely nothing. And I knew that they had done some kind things. I knew it because I know these guys. I've known them for quite a while. But they couldn't think of anything. It didn't come to mind. But as they sat and thought, it started coming. You know, when they were kind to somebody. And actually, then the conversation got, we never got any further than discussing this for 45 minutes. There was 11 guys, and as they started talking, they realized they had been committing some really wonderful acts of kindness, and they had been bypassing the joy and happiness that came from it, except one guy. And he put it this way. He said, "I'm the greedy type. I'm very selfish. I really like giving my ramen away because it makes, you know, ramen is like currency in prison. I like giving my ramen away because people are so surprised and they're so happy. It makes me feel good. But I know it's just for me. That's why I'm doing it. It makes me feel good." And I told him, no, that's the kind of happiness you want to cultivate. This is healthy happiness. And he was, oh, so this is okay, this kind of happiness. Absolutely, this is what we want to do. This is virtuous conduct. This is the joy of happiness that's available at any time at all. And then other guys started talking, and they realized they had done some really kind things to people too. One guy mentioned that he has a new cellmate, and the guy, he said, has no family, no friends, no anybody, and he didn't have any hygienic products. Prison doesn't provide hygienic products. You have to buy them yourself, or somebody better give them to you. And so this guy, he said, I never give things away. He goes, I never do. He goes, but I felt so bad for this guy, I gave him half my stuff, half the toothpaste, broke off a bar of soap. And he said he was so happy. He said it really made me feel good. He goes, I totally forgot about that. They all had something that they had done that made them happy, and they didn't notice it at the time. And you all do that too. That's the kind of happiness that we have to start paying attention to. Because guess what? When you start cultivating that kind of happiness, it builds on itself. You see more of it. And you see more opportunities to enjoy it. Okay, I'm going to tell you a bedtime story. And we're not even close because we're going to have time to do something good. Okay, so this actually comes from Bhante Gunaratana's book, Eight Mindful Steps to Happiness, which I've read from cover to cover probably 10 times at this point, and have some of the Noble Eightfold Path people here too who are currently studying it with me. So in this section, he's talking about happiness. He said there was a deva who's a spirit who had the secret of happiness. She loved the secret of happiness. She enjoyed it, and she didn't want to share it. So she thought, where can I hide it? Where can I put this so I can have it anytime I want, but nobody else gets it. So she went down to the bottom of the ocean, figured I'll bury it way down here. And then she thought, no, there's going to be some good swimmer of some kind, they're going to find it. So she went up onto the land and went into a cave and walked deep into the cave and decided, I'll bury happiness here. And now there's going to be a hiker of some kind, they'll find it. So she came back out and decided, I'm going to climb the highest mountain there is and I'll put happiness up there. So she went up there. Nah, people being what they are, they're gonna figure a way to climb this mountain. I'm not going to put it here. And then she thought, I know where I'll put happiness. I'm going to put it in the human mind. And that's where she put it. It's always available, but we don't look at it. We don't see it. So, we're going to do an exercise. And you have to divide yourself into four. And you better not go running out on me on this, because some of you can't stand this. I want you each to discuss, what do you do to create a happy life? What have you done to create a happy life? And I would like one of you four to take notes on that, so we can report back and hear what the answers are. Okay? So divide yourselves into four. Yes, you have to do it. And pick somebody to report back. And if everybody has the same answer, that's fine. Okay. We're coming back. And I'd like to hear from the spokesman from each group on your thoughts about happiness in your life, and when you have discovered happiness, how are you cultivating happiness? So, anybody who wants to start?
I can start with our choir group. We kind of just made a list, and then I could check next to one that we all had. So meditation was one thing that we all had in common. Dharma, applying the teachings to our lives. Being of service, generosity. Connecting with community, being part of the community. Exercise and eating right, like exercise, going for walks or riding bikes was popular. Being peaceful, simple things like having the first cup of coffee and reading the paper. developing self with a career, intimate relationships, friendships, having enough money, basic needs met, being free from debt, being able to work as a team, teamwork, learning, continual learning, music, also lots of checks for music. And doing our best and not expecting not being expecting perfection, being okay with self-accepting, being imperfect, being with nature, observing animals, being with animals, pets, feelings of when we're feeling gratitude or appreciation.
Wow. You guys are busy. Thank you. Quite a list. Okay. Yes.
Well, I think the main theme that we all seem to touch on was finding work that, you can survive on, but that you feel good about and that helps others, or at
least
doesn't
right.
cause harm to others in any way.
Right, and that goes back to virtuous conduct. Innately understanding that and seeing the contentment that brings.
That and finding the joy in the small things and sharing them with others.
Great. Thank you. Okay. Another group. Yeah, Dave.
Me.
You.
Well, this might sound like the bargain basement compared to this corner. But we had some really happiness coming from some insights being aware that gratification of the sensual pleasures is not happiness. Broad happiness, a release, an insight that and trying to follow the precepts, meditation, similarly stopping thinking about the future, the insight that, wow, that brought a lot of satisfaction, a lot of freedom, and peace, peace of mind, just getting away from that angst, and just being, seeing how useless it is to kind of prevaricate on the future. Doing things for others, volunteering with the prisoners, brought not just happiness, but an underlying, more permanent sense of contentment, I think, that is greater than happiness. Somebody said playing the fiddle.
Music, like this group.
Again, volunteering, giving to others kind of, again, this kind of an insight. You get away from groping for happiness, because the ego disappears when you give away. When you are generous, the ego is usually saying, well, why are you doing that? So those were our insights.
Thank you.
Okay. And we had freely contributing to something and sharing knowledge with other people. And in a tech world, sharing shortcuts. helping other people, feelings of gratitude, like holding back in mind so someone else can get in to whatever is happening. Having compassion and seeing someone else happy.
Great, thank you.
I wish that is returning jerkiness with goodwill. To be aware of love that is coming my way and take it as an inspiration so I can put it out there myself. Cultivating gratitude. Taking pleasure and moving toward my goals and realizing it. Letting myself do what I really like and having no expectations. Choosing something I won't regret later on. And Doug wrap it up with taking a nap with my cat.
Thank you. Okay, you guys?
You have a pen.
Well, then, can you remember what you're talking about?
Yeah, I
about?
Remember the things that I did. Going on retreats, sharing my joy with others, cultivating.
That seems to be an ongoing theme, doesn't it?
Yeah, very
much
so.
Yeah, good.
Just being outside. It was being outside. That was yours.
Yes.
And the joy, there was also the joy of home, being in the home. And then the music's already come up several times, of creativity, being able to create something. Let's see, what else? Else?
And taking care of business.
Oh, yes, right.
Blamelessness. No regrets. Melanie, do you have anything?
Yeah, practicing forgiveness. That was one of the
wonderful
ones. And not hold grudges. And
it's a huge one. Okay, thank you. You with no pens. Okay.
It's a shame that the joy of being home and the joy of being outside don't combine into a joy of being homeless.
Yeah. Okay, anybody not report in? Yes.
We had volunteer and helping others, animals, renunciation, and just choosing simplification. Knowing the difference between needs and wants, meditation and Dharma practice, and really consciously looking at how you spend your time in your life with your, who are you spending time with, who are the people you're spending time with, and how are you spending your time at work, and if it's right livelihood.
Right. Thank you. Yeah.
Okay, here's some ideas that we shared. One of us said working outside in the dirt really gives pleasure. Another one said starting a career, looking at the spiritual side of the career, and helping others, I think, was a theme that was suggested. Being able to choose who you spend time with was another theme that came up. Being disciplined, doing yoga and meditation, that was a common theme. Another person said that the joy of exercising and the joy of practicing yoga, which is both exercise and it's spiritual and it's looking at life, it's a lot of things. Do what we do that gives us joy as opposed to pleasure, and I won't go into that right now. Engage in activities where one can see the beauty of it, for example, art or working in the garden, nature, that sort of thing. Another joy, another happiness was an antidote to sadness, and giving seemed to be a theme, that by giving we were able to become happy, not wanting. Spending time with our families and our grandchildren was a theme that came up from several of us. The challenge of learning new things was something that was brought up, and I would add to that sharing those ideas with other people in a way that they could understand it. Another one of us said that being with people and getting to know other people really is a joy. It gives a lot of pleasure for this person. Let's see, what else? Oh, I heard someone over here say drinking coffee and reading the newspaper. I had to add that because it's one of my greatest joys in life. I don't know why I didn't say it. And so that's it. Good enough.
Thank you.
Yep.
Yes.
Painting and writing, traveling solo, slowing down, taking the time to fully and mindfully experience each moment, actually aligning life with my values, trying to achieve the absence of suffering in the Buddhist way, staying away from self-inflicted suffering, detaching from certain outcomes, detaching from toxic relationships, and being mindful and aware of grasping and aversion in my life. And then I added interacting with animals and pets, because that was one line too, and I didn't mention
it.
Great. Thank you. Do we get everybody?
Well, ours, every one of ours, which was a long list, have been mentioned.
The joy of going last.
Music, in the sense of listening to music, singing, and playing. So mm-hmm.
Right.
But they have mentioned music.
Oh, okay. So does anybody see some themes coming running through here?
Nobody said they enjoy watching TV.
A general theme.
Commercials, especially commercials.
There seems to be a general theme going on, and I, if I was to sum it up, I'd say living a meaningful life. And also, there doesn't seem to be an obsession with self. So much, you know, is with art, with creativity, being with animals, of service. You know, all these things get you outside yourself.
Brothers, I heard that more than anything, I think.
Yeah, I
just keep thinking about Ajahn Sumedho said once, every time I think of myself, I get depressed.
That's very good. Well, it is a source of suffering, as the Buddha said, trying to grasp that self and pin it down and making it do what you want, and we find so much relief when we can get away from that. Jackie said not being concerned about the future. Dave said, volunteering, being with pets, creativity allows the self to just disappear. You're in the moment, being creative, music, all of these things. Just keep pointing to the truth of the Dharma. Mm-hmm. So, Be aware of the joy in your life. Start paying attention to it. It's all around. Actually notice it. And I didn't have time to go into another aspect of it, but another talk, another time. So it is 1 minute to nine. You're welcome. May you all be well and safe and very happy.